The Workers' Party Manifesto 2025 is titled Working for Singapore. It sets out our vision for a more resilient, inclusive, and democratic Singapore. It contains 125 policy proposals across 5 key areas aimed at improving the lives of all Singaporeans. We begin with the concrete steps to tackle cost of living pressures, from making utilities, housing, and care more affordable, to proposing alternatives to the GST and enhancing support for retrenched workers. Next, we focus on economic growth and opportunity. Our policies aim to strengthen the Singaporean core in the workforce, uplift SMEs, and prepare workers for future industries through affordable reskilling and CPF reforms to boost retirement adequacy. The third section is about building a fairer society. We call for better social support for families, caregivers, seniors, and those in poverty, and for a more inclusive planning that gives everyone a real chance to thrive. Fourth, we make the case for deeper democracy and stronger accountability. We propose institutional safeguards to check power and reforms to our electoral system, including lowering the voting age to 18 and returning to single-member constituencies. Finally, in a more uncertain world, we offer ideas to strengthen Singapore's security, from countering grey zone threats to boosting NS pay, to securing our digital and physical supply chains for food, medicine, and essential goods. This is our plan for a fairer, more secure Singapore, one that works better for everyone. This is our plan for working for Singapore. WP supports maintaining and building up a strong military to protect our nation's sovereignty and security. We call for stronger countermeasures against grey zone tactics. Some of these measures include enhancing information resilience through integrating critical thinking into school curricula and national service training to counter disinformation efforts by foreign powers. We also call for full-time national servicemen's median allowances to be raised to a median wage of $1,600 a month and for the term NS allowance to be changed to NS salary to better reflect the contributions and sacrifices that our young men make.
Here, what we believe is that there is a necessity for greater support for addressing job insecurity in this uncertain economic environment via redundancy assurance. Now, this is, to be clear, not entirely dissimilar in spirit to what was released by the ruling party in the JSS, 6-month support as well as incentives for job search. Now, to be clear, this is also common across unemployment insurance schemes all around the world. But we think that there are nuances, and these nuances are important. For instance, we believe that replacement should be up to 40% of median income, which comes up to around $2,000 a month. At the same time, we also believe that this should be front-loaded over a 6-month period rather than equally spaced out. And there's good economic research to support this kind of front-loading for creating greater incentives to look for jobs. And finally, I think what is perhaps most important is that we believe that these should be funded by worker-paid insurance premium. Now, this, we believe, makes it more sustainable and also ties beneficiaries much closer to the contributors rather than to the general taxpayer. Now, relatedly, we also believe that retrenchment benefits should be mandated, which as they aren't right now, and this should start with both small and medium-sized firms. Now, a second thrust in the first chapter is an importance of making housing more affordable. Essentially, what we try to address is what we believe is an irreconcilable conflict between asset price appreciation and housing affordability. We believe that the target should be a house price to income ratio that is much closer to 3 rather than what is currently prevalent. We also believe that this process will enable an orderly transition, and the way that we can ensure that this orderly transition occurs is to have a universal lease buyback scheme. This is the way that this scheme would work would be such that we would have a buyback with rational pricing consistent with what would be implied by Balas curve. Now, as an aside, what this also does is that it frees up a stock of readily available housing that could be used for short-term purposes, and this would be rented out at rates somewhere between what is the market commercial rate and prevailing HDB rental rates. Now, turning from offense, if you will, from defense to offense in addressing this global trade frictions, we believe that there are also policies that will help Singaporean workers as well as businesses address growth in the long run. So first, we believe that there should be a need to prioritize local hiring and reduce dependence on foreign talent. For this, we believe that one important policy is to tie employment passes to skills transfer. So employers would be required to demonstrate skills transfer, which in turn will be tracked, monitored, and reported as key performance indicators that is in line with the industry transformation roadmaps. In the medium term, of course, what we need to do is to better align or realign our school curricula with industry needs. And this is especially for jobs that are already listed on the MOM's shortage occupation list. Admissions into programs can be made such that they would allow Singaporeans to enter as long as they meet minimum entry standards instead of relative performance. And this would remove what we think has been a consistent excuse of local talent shortage. Finally, I think we can do more to help our SMEs internationalize and to exploit the opportunities that are inevitably going to come up in our backyard, especially in the region like ASEAN. Surveys continue to show that small and medium enterprises face challenges in terms of access to financing. So here we think a long-standing Workers' Party proposal of supporting an export-import bank with a focus on digitization, sustainability, and industry 4.0 projects will help go a long way to helping our firms and be competitive in this new unfolding economic environment.
As our demographics change, so too does the burden on unpaid carers. To alleviate this, we call for enhanced support for family caregiving with specific proposals of 6 days of paid leave for those who care for elderly parents or family members with disabilities, and to extend childcare leave to a per-child basis. For education, we also call for a strengthening of our learning environment, repeating our calls to reduce class sizes to allow teachers to provide more personalised attention to students to facilitate the teaching and nurturing of every child. Many of our proposals in this section also aim to broaden our education system to be more accessible to those with extra needs or from vulnerable backgrounds. Other proposals contained in this segment include improving access to housing, improving the work environment, and setting up a local sporting system for sporting success. As a democracy, our governance system here in Singapore believes in the will of the people, you, our voters. And a key part of our democracy is to ensure that accountability goes beyond holding elections every few years. We also repeat our call to lower the voting age to 18 in order to enfranchise younger Singaporeans to meaningfully participate in civic life earlier, especially given that 18-year-old Singaporeans already are entrusted to bear arms for our country and to take on the fiduciary duties of a company director. This change will bring us in line with most other countries, given that Singapore is only one of 8 countries in the world with a minimum voting age of 21 or older.
Just to be clear, when we put forward our policy proposals, we don't take reference from what the PAP does and say that, okay, let's make a different policy from what the PAP does. What we do is, firstly, we listen to our constituents on the ground, and that's the benefit of having elected MPs. Elected MPs are able to listen to their constituents week in, week out, during Meet the People sessions, during house visits. We hear the feedback and inputs from our residents. And from there, we can make an assessment about whether or not the current policies have gaps. And if there are gaps, then we'll put forward the policy proposals. And if they happen to align with the PAPs, well, we make no apologies for that. And what you would have discovered is that on quite a number of our policies. For example, our redundancy insurance policy, which we had pushed for many years, you see them being resurfaced by Labour MPs after a while, and somehow it makes it into PAP policy. So I don't make any apologies for having similarities with the PAP, and I think we in many ways we are leading the PAP in many of these policies. But really, it's not a contest about who is first and who is second. What is more important is that are the policies fit for Singapore? Are the policies benefiting our residents, benefiting Singaporeans as a whole, and benefiting Singaporeans in the long term,